Speaking of the weather, speaking of the weather.
And about once a season on this program, we speak about the weather, with Labor Day and the official end of summer upon us now, and the hurricane season approaching its peak, this is one of those times. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 past 6 on this Wednesday, September the 3rd, and we will welcome in our semi-regular weather expert this hour to take a look ahead as to what kind of fall and winter weather we can expect in Wisconsin, take a look back on what kind of a spring and summer we had, plus discuss the other weather systems making news this week, like the hurricanes and tropical storms in the Atlantic. And of course, we will welcome your questions as we go along. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Michael Morgan, a professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks for coming back. You were in Washington, D.C. for most of the summer, huh?
Yes, for the past year.
Oh, for the past year.
Right,
okay.
I was on a sabbatical leave from the university, and I had the opportunity to do a congressional science fellowship, so I was working with a senator in the U.S. senator.
Yeah, you were considering going down to New Orleans to chase Gustav, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, but you didn't.
Just because with classes starting and trying to get back settled back here in Madison, time didn't permit that.
You are someone who hurricanes a part of your studies.
Right, hurricane. I studied hurricanes. I did 3 years ago, a little over 3 years ago. I was just getting back from Katrina. I went down with some students to look at the landfall and talk with folks down there about their experiences.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what happened with Gustav. It hit the Louisiana coast a little further west than thought at first.
Right. Yeah, it hit came ashore. I think it's now Houma, Louisiana, which is to the west and southwest of New Orleans, a few days ago, and it's been making its track inland. A lot of rain, a lot of wind, but it came ashore as a Category 2 storm. Although I haven't looked carefully at the surface reports to see if any location in Louisiana had sustained winds of about 110, which is what was the estimate at landfall. But certainly a lot of damage down there, considerable flooding, and it's a tropical depression, it's no longer being tracked by the Hurricane Center, the Hydrological Prediction Center in D.C. In that area, they're actually following the storm for the flooding potential as it moves through the central part of the United States and possibly impacting our area starting later on tomorrow afternoon and evening.
We'll see some rain because of it.
We'll see some much-needed rain because of that. We've been dry here, and we'll probably be talking about that during the hour.
Yeah. Oh, so it's not uncommon for the rain of a Gulf Coast hurricane to be felt here in Wisconsin.
Oh, not at all, not at all. And so that combined with the frontal passage that went through to the last couple, just this morning, in fact, is going to help enhance the rainfall for the southern part of the state.
Yeah, there are other hurricanes or potential hurricanes, tropical storms right now swirling around in the Atlantic.
Right, yeah, the Atlantic has heated up quite a bit. There are three named storms in the Atlantic. There's Tropical Storm Hannah, which is in the Bahamas, Tropical Storm Ike, which is out in the Central Atlantic, and then Tropical Storm Josephine, which is just off the African coast. And these are all trekking toward the west and northwest. Hannah is the most immediate threat for the southeastern coastal part of the United States, where landfall could be somewhere in either Georgia or South Carolina in the next 2.5 to 3 days as a Category 1 or possibly Category 2 hurricane. Ike, which is, again, in the Central Atlantic heading toward the west, will probably in about 5 days be approaching the southern Bahamas as a major hurricane. So that's going to be something of concern. And then Josephine, at present, looks like it'll be tracking to the west-northwest out in the central Atlantic and only be a harm to perhaps shipping interest and the fish.
And forecasters are expecting there will be maybe a couple more named storms before the season is over.
At least, yeah. Yes, yeah. That's correct. In fact, some of the computer models are forecasting in the next week or so we could see another one or two storms as these disturbances move off the African coast. They could intensify.
Fairly active season. Yeah.
Very active season, very active period in this just right now. In fact, September 10th is sort of climatologically the most active part of the season. We're approaching that sort of right on schedule, but we've already started off with a pretty active season.
Well, we've had some interesting weather all summer long here in Wisconsin. Yesterday, I believe Madison hit 90 degrees for the very first time.
That's great.
How unusual is that, that we get our first 90-degree day of the summer in September?
It happens every few years. We'll see that happen. I think 2000 was the last time that it happened, and actually it was the end of September, the last day of September, I think, that we reached 90 degrees. Typically, Madison sees about 12 90-degree days each summer. And obviously this summer, we haven't quite we didn't only reach that once. Milwaukee got to 89 yesterday. That's their warmest day of the year. And typically Milwaukee sees about 9 days. So this has been a relatively cool summer. And some of it could be attributed to our discussion from several months ago with the flooding. You get a very, very wet surface, lots of rain. That rain gets absorbed into the soil deep down. And when the sun comes up, the sun typically on a dry day basically heats the ground. The ground heats up and then the air heats up. Now, with a very wet soil that we had over the earlier part of the summer, the ground gets heated. The first thing that happens is we evaporate a lot of rain. The water, you know, the rain gets evaporated. And evaporation, as you know, is a cooling process. And so that keeps the temperature down for a while. So in the areas of our state that didn't get as much rain earlier in the summer, they've actually had probably a closer to normal temperature, the northern part of the state in particular.
And speaking of cooling off, it's a lot different today and will be a lot different for the next couple of days than what we saw yesterday.
Right. We have a air mass that moved in from the Pacific Northwest in Canada just late last night, early this morning, with the passage of a cold front. And we're going to get even cooler with more clouds and rain from the remnants of Gustav. Well, again, later on tomorrow evening and into Thursday.
We'll check our weather forecast for the next few days, and then we will also welcome your questions about the weather. 1-800-642-1234. Send an email to talk@wpr.org. Michael Morgan, a professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, is here to talk with you about weather here in Wisconsin, or hurricanes that are swirling around in the Atlantic, tropical storms Hannah, Ike, and Josephine on the horizon. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 18 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, September the 3rd. Coming up later this morning, we will have coverage of the Republican National Convention, reaction and analysis of the issues being discussed. We will welcome in a guest who is an alternate delegate to the Republican National Convention from Wisconsin coming up in our next hour. Remember, after 9 o'clock, the special On Point call-in with host Tom Ashbrook live from the convention. That's after 9. Right now, we are talking about the weather. Yesterday was one of the hottest days of the year in this neck of the woods, yet numbs the word according to the New Farmer's Almanac, which is predicting a colder than average winter. Our guest might dispute that. Michael Morgan, professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, is here to talk with us about the weather issues in the news, from tropical storms and hurricanes to the Farmer's Almanac and what we can expect this fall and winter as we say goodbye to summer. Any questions on your mind about the weather? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Professor Morgan, we had a caller who couldn't stay with us who wanted to know if Europe also gets hurricanes and tornadoes.
Okay. Certainly Europe will get tornadoes. There are occasionally tornadoes that go through Europe. Hurricanes are a fairly rare occurrence in Europe. I think it was in 2005, the very active hurricane season we had in the Atlantic, Europe was actually hit by the remnants of a hurricane. It was actually a tropical storm that moved into Europe. I think it was Vince that hit the southwestern part of Spain and Portugal as it moved in. So they got the remnants of hurricanes, and they were called basically mid-latitude cyclones that go by there, but they're not labeled as hurricanes, but the remnants of them. But sometimes, very rarely, maybe once every 50 to 100 years or even more, they'll get hit by an actual hurricane or tropical storm. But that's not a big issue for them. Largely, it isn't, because the cooler water temperatures over the eastern Atlantic prohibit those storms from maintaining their intensity. But they'll often get the remnants of those, and they can be very windy. And
the hurricanes that we typically see when they hit the east coast or the Gulf Coast of the U.S., those are hurricanes that typically form off the coast of Africa?
Right. During the latter part of August through middle of September, we were called the Cape Verde season. These are a cluster of thunderstorms, weather disturbances that move off the African coast. They're kind of like the big thunderstorm complexes that rolled through the Midwest during the earlier part of the summer for our time. But these move off the African coast. They initially sometimes will weaken because the cooler temperatures in the eastern Atlantic, but once they get over to the warmer temperatures just to the east of the or west of the Cape Verde Islands, they can begin to spin up and become tropical depressions, tropical storms, and hurricanes. And very often, some of the biggest storms that that impact the U.S. have their origins from this Cape Verde area off the African coast.
Yeah. Now, Gustav, right now is what in the Central Plains right now, or
right, Gustav's in Central Plains, I think, moving into western Arkansas and now beginning to head toward the northeast.
Okay. All right, and we will get. Lots of rain, a little bit of rain. What will we see?
I think basically if you sort of drew a line from Marinette County all the way down to Grant County, and southeast of that is where it's going to have the biggest impacts from the remnants of Gustav. There'll be rain probably anywhere from 1 to maybe 4 or 5 inches in the extreme southwestern southeastern part of our state. Madison will probably get maybe an inch or two of rain. We'll see a slight increase in winds. It'll feel like a mid-fall storm with a northeast wind that's going to be picking up tomorrow afternoon and evening. Rain's picking up, very heavy rains, some embedded thunderstorms, but it's not going to feel like a tropical storm or anything of that sort, but it'll get kind of breezy for a while, and that'll be basically the remnants of Gustav going by
and,
us.
And remind me, I mean, we had, we discussed a few months ago, tons of rain in parts of southern Wisconsin especially. What's the situation for us? Are we parts of the state, are we in a drought or not now?
I don't think officially we're in a drought. If you look over the last 90 days, we're still above normal for the amount of rainfall we'd expected over the last 90 days. But if you look at a much shorter time period, basically the last 30 days, much of the state has rainfall deficits anywhere from about an inch to 3 inches below normal. And the drier parts of the state are basically the northeastern part of the state, up around Florence, Forest, Landglade County. Those areas have really been dry, and they were dry even a year ago when if we were talking a year ago, those were areas that were dry. So I think maybe possibly sort of slight drought conditions in the northern part of the state. The southern part of the state has been just dry, but we'll be making up a good chunk of that our rainfall deficit probably in the next 2 or 3 days.
Yeah. Well, what do your weather models tell you about the coming fall and winter? The Farmer's Almanac says numbs the word. You don't think so?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm the National Climatic Prediction Center is basically forecasting above normal temperatures for the upper Midwest. In fact, for just about the entire country from the West Coast all the way to the East Coast, above normal temperatures and the greatest chances of above normal weather actually centered over Wisconsin and Illinois. Looking like a very warm period for December, January, and February. And as we move from this time period toward the beginning of the winter season, basically normal to slightly above normal, and then that sort of above normal possibility is beginning to intensify. As for precipitation, it looks like probably sort of equal chances of above or below normal precipitation. So it looks like most of the country is actually going to be experiencing a close to normal rainfall during the winter season. That's, again, these are predictions that were made about a week and a half ago for the next period, with the southeastern United States possibly being below normal precipitation-wise. So warm and dry looks like the forecast for late fall through the winter. But again, these one of the things that I'm going to be keeping track of is, as we talk about these long-range predictions, is just to see how well do they verify what happened. Because one of the things that I've learned is if you follow the current trends that we're in, which is going to basically be below normal temperatures for the next week or two, sometimes those trends can be manifest as the early stages of a new weather regime, a new weather pattern that's beginning to set up that can persist for a long period of time. But the official forecast is for above normal, an above normal winter in terms of temperature and about normal precipitation wise.
About normal precipitation.
Right, about normal.
And that means then we won't get, for example, 100 plus inches of snow in Madison as we did last winter.
We can't directly translate that. I mean, that'll be sort of a reasonable inference is that based on the fact that we'll be above normal, but above normal could mean some periods of time we're above normal and it's dry and then we drop below, significantly below normal and get the precipitation. And so that's, I don't want to say not a snowy winter, but it looks like the chances are we'll probably see less snow than we saw last winter. And since that was a record-breaking winter, I think it's probably safe to say no 100-inch winter, but our normal of about 50 inches or so probably is possible.
Yeah, I can live with that. So how are these predictions made?
The predictions are made using a combination of factors. One of the things we have, the actual forecast models, these are dynamical models, which you basically throw the entire kitchen sink of all our knowledge into computer models. And these are integrated forward in time from now out for several weeks and months. Also, we look at temperature, like sea surface temperature anomalies over the globe. El Nino being one of the more prominent weather, climate, ocean patterns. And they consider what phase of El Nino are we in, or is it La Nina? How's that going to actually influence our weather? And they look at us also just global temperature and wind patterns to get a sense of statistically what do we expect given this particular scenario out for several months. So it's a combination of dynamics and statistics that lead to these forecasts. As for El Nino or La Nina, last winter we were in a La Nina pattern. Those conditions over the last month and a half or so have gone to basically neutral. So the sea surface temperatures in the Central Pacific are pretty close to normal. If you looked at, you know, La Nina is below normal, El Nino is typically above normal temperatures, and those can have an impact on the Midwest weather. We're in neutral conditions, and that's expected to at least persist into the early part of the winter, which probably is one of the reasons we're going to be normal to slightly above normal, normal above normal temperature-wise, and precipitation basically being about normal.
Yeah, and the difference between El Nino and La Nina is temperature?
It's based on the a number of measures, but one of the most prominent ones is the sea surface temperature at the ocean surface and just below the at some depth into the ocean. Above normal temperatures over the Central Pacific are what's called an El Nino phase, and La Nina is when those temperature anomalies, the temperature characteristics are below normal in that same region.
So which will be influencing us this fall and winter?
Right now it looks like the temperatures are going to be close to normal, so it won't be La Nina or El Nino. Will be sort of in what's called a neutral phase, yeah. And that the sort of above normal temperature-wise as well as about normal precipitation is what's anticipated based on, in part, based on that pattern.
So this fall and winter, probably warmer and drier.
Right.
And that means above normal temperatures, about the same average precipitation for this fall and winter. What about the very short term? We're going to get a little bit of rain from Gustav, and that probably all over the state.
Really, it's the southeastern part of the state is going to be most impacted. The places that, you know, most need the rain, which is to our north, as you approach Green Bay, and those areas are probably going to escape, unfortunately, this next period of rain. But over the next, I would say the next, you know, week to 10 days or so, most of the upper Midwest is going to be below normal temperature-wise and slightly above normal precipitation-wise. But I think the heaviest rain that we're going to get in the next 2 to 3 days from Gustav will be basically confined to the southeastern part of the state.
Will we experience another, taste of summer weather before it's over?
Now, looking at the projections from now, for at least for the next 2 to 2.5 weeks, it looks like we're going to basically be relatively cool, temperatures in the 70s, maybe mid-70s at most. But I think even as you move toward the end of the month, there are still chances of us getting into the upper 80s and low 90s. That's happened a few years ago.
We'll check the news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will continue talking about the weather. Welcome your questions about the weather for Michael Morgan, Professor of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Our number, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us your question or comment to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Speaking of the weather, it isn't the humidity, it's you.
This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along on this Wednesday, September the 3rd at 6:36. And we are talking about the weather. Talking about the unofficial end of summer. Had one of the hottest days of the day of the year yesterday. Now cooler weather here to stay for at least a few days. Rainy weather as well, thanks to Gustav. Talking with Michael Morgan, Professor of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, about hurricanes, about predictions for this fall and this winter, and anything else on your mind, weather-related, 1-800-642-1234, or send your question via email, talk@wpr.org. We received an email from Molly in Milwaukee. How much do you attribute the increased amount of precipitation last winter and early this summer, along with the active hurricane season, to a human-induced climate change? Professor Morgan, we often get questions along those lines. So is this global warming?
Well, that's a tough question to answer. I mean, the attribution of any particular weather event or a set of weather events to global warming at this point is a little bit, it's a difficult to make those links. But I can say that, as we mentioned several months ago when we talked about the flooding, the extremely heavy rainfalls that we've been experiencing over short periods of time, these sort of big downpours, are consistent with a globally warmed environment is going to be conducive for heavy precipitation events. And so flash flooding is something that climate scientists have suspected would be and anticipated would be effect of global warming. So very intense heavy precipitation events are consistent with with global warming. Obviously, you have to look at the distribution of those events over and over the time periods, but I think that's one aspect that at least is consistent. I don't want to necessarily say that it's directly due to global warming, but it's consistent with what we expect to see in a globally warmed environment. As for the hurricanes, that's actually a very heated topic, no pun intended, in the climate community in terms of how do the number and intensity of hurricanes, are how are they expected to vary in a new climate regime, basically a warmer climate. And some people certainly believe that more intense storms are likely, but the number of those storms, particularly for the Atlantic Basin, and the trends in the number are something that we really don't have a good handle on right now.
Our next caller is Wayne in Green Bay. Hi, Wayne. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to ask if temperatures and, weather in general is tending to be milder than it was, let's say, back in the 80s. It seems like we don't get as much snow as we used to get. The temperatures seem to be getting warmer. Is that the case?
In fact, it's a little tricky to say that. I think certainly if you look at some of the warmest decades, both nationwide and for the upper Midwest, they've been, and the warmest years have been in most recent years. For Green Bay, in fact, for this past summer, it's certainly been above normal temperature-wise, below normal precipitation-wise, and I think really the northern half of the state since over a year ago has been below normal precipitation-wise. So our sort of immediate short-term climate has certainly been warmer and drier. If you go back again 10, 20, 30 years, the trend has been for warmer temperatures over, again, much of the country. And I would certainly that translates also into the upper Midwest. Some of the warmest years that we've had have occurred during the last several years. And if you go and as for precipitation and snowfall, I can't speak directly to Green Bay, but I suspect, as it's been true for the for southern Wisconsin, with the exception of this past winter, we've seen less snowfall and certainly milder temperatures during the winter.
Boy, I don't know, Professor Morgan. I've lived in Wisconsin all my life, and my memory fades as I get older. But this past winter had to be one of the most difficult winters in Madison anyway.
Right.
I mean, I know the snowfall was record amount. I mean, it was one snowstorm after another, and we had way more than average snowfall
Certainly.
In Madison last winter. And gosh, it seemed like it was colder, too. It just was a really tough winter. It was one of the first times I said to myself, why am I living here?
As much as I love Wisconsin, love this my new adopted state, if you will, I was glad I was in D.C. because I missed the snowfall. But it certainly was colder and snowier. And I recall we had one of these discussions back near the end of November, early December, and we're talking about sort of the forecast, seasonal forecast. I do recall there was at least a suggestion that the winter would be close to normal precipitation-wise and above normal. I mean, above normal precipitation-wise and close to normal temperature-wise. And so we're kind of debating, will this mean more snow or less? And I think I probably took the side that it was kind of unclear, but possibly less snow. And that was certainly a wrong interpretation of the forecast. So it was cooler than normal, colder than normal. And once you have snow, that reflects the sunlight back, and so it keeps you cold. So once you have a deep snowpack, that's something that reinforces the cold and keeps you colder.
Yeah. And when you were talking to Wayne, though, when you said it was, it's been warmer and drier, that was more for the northern part of the state anyway.
Yeah, certainly the northern part of the state, yeah.
Yeah. Anything else, Wayne?
I just wanted to know if this is a reflection of global warming.
Again, that's the best that I can say at this point. I think the best that most people could say is that this is certainly consistent with global warming. Global warming doesn't mean everywhere is going to warm up. It certainly can be regional variations in it, but the more intense precipitation events, the certainly just the warmer temperatures in general are consistent with what the climate models are projecting for our area.
Yeah. And we're not going to be able to get into a political discussion on a global warming, man-induced global warming right. versus normal climate change. But typically, the climate every 30 years or so goes through these ups and downs. Is that about right? Or No.
Not so much. No. I think the one of the big things that we can sort of say about global warming is that when you look at the numerical prediction models that are used for climate prediction, when you don't put in the greenhouse gases, you don't see the warming trend that's been observed. When you put those in there, you do see it.
Okay. Edith in Madison is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. You're talking one of my favorite subjects. I've been a meteorological junkie ever since a small child. My parents raced sailboats on Long Island Sound, so I grew up learning about clouds and changing cloud patterns and all of that. But mainly, my comment is about a hurricane that traveled up the eastern coast of the United States and across the North Atlantic and swept down on the southern coast of England in a huge way, destroying many, many hundreds of ancient trees along the Channel coast from the New Forest on eastward. And at that particular time, there was a sailboat race in the English Channel, and many, many of the sailboats were knocked down and damaged. However, I don't remember the year that occurred, but I'm curious to know whether England as a country, its weather patterns are always affected by the weather that comes off our continent and goes across the North Atlantic, or are there other patterns that affect that country?
That's a great question. England does get influenced by weather patterns that move off the east coast of the United States, and depending on the season, it could be anywhere from 2 or 3 days to a week later. They do get the remnants of hurricanes and tropical storms, and they're a different breed of storm by the time they've crossed the Atlantic. They're more like the typical low-pressure areas you see on weather maps here in the States. But another big influence for England, certainly given their proximity to the European continent, is they're often influenced when they have easterly flow from weather systems that come off of Scandinavia and northern Europe moving toward the southwest can influence the weather over England. They also have ocean currents, which are different. They're at the end of the Gulf Stream, and that can actually that keeps their climate relatively mild. And fluctuations in the Gulf Stream can, over large periods of time, influence the weather and climate for northern England, or for northern Europe in particular, the northwestern Europe and England. So they get a mix of the storms that you get off the East Coast. They eventually get wrapped up into a different type of storm once they get to England, but also they get influenced by just continental European weather as well.
Thanks very much, Edith, for the call. We'll take a moment to check our regional weather forecasts all over Wisconsin. Talking with Michael Morgan about the weather, he's a professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Talking the weather because of hurricanes and tropical storms in the news these days. The Farmer's Almanac out recently predicting a colder than average winter for the Midwest in 2009. But Professor Morgan says that's not what the experts are saying. We're welcoming your questions about the weather at 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Don't have a question about the weather? Well, then let us know. What's your favorite season and why? We're approaching autumn. Is fall one of your favorite seasons? Winter? Spring? Summer? Tell us what your favorite season is and why. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 12 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, September the 3rd. We'll take a look at the latest political news from St. Paul, talking with a guest, a Wisconsinite there at the Republican National Convention. We'll get Van Mobley's take on what President Bush had to say last night, as also Fred Thompson and Joe Lieberman, the speakers last night at the Republican National Convention. We'll talk more about that after 7, and then we will talk about what's fair game and what's not when it comes to media coverage in the presidential campaigns. The media is abuzz about the news that vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin's 17-year-old daughter is pregnant. But should the private matters of public figures be off limits? We'll talk more about that after 8 o'clock this morning. Right now, we are talking about the weather. Talking about the weather patterns that will be affecting Wisconsin's weather in the days to come and the months to come, for that matter. Michael Morgan, our guest, professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And we have an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Plus, just for fun, wondering if you're looking forward to this fall and winter. What's your favorite season? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We did get an email from a listener saying that fall is his or her favorite season, Professor Morgan, and had a question about leaves changing in the fall, whether the weather affects that, saying that in Taylor County, the leaves are already changing and thinking that this is a bit early for that, but wondering how the weather affects the change of color of the leaves.
I can't speak directly to the sort of characteristics of leaves and how they are influenced by weather directly. I know one thing that I'm familiar with is that when trees are stressed, like they certainly are going to be in the northern part of the state where Taylor County is, where it's been dry, that can lead to some early and brilliant colors, but it's also a sign of some stress on the trees. As for the sort of transition of seasons going from the summer to the fall with decreasing temperatures, and is that herald colder winter coming up, I don't think that's the case. I think perhaps the early change we're seeing might be in part due to the fact that the trees themselves are stressed because of dry conditions in the northern part of the state.
Bill Martins, the new producer here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Welcome, Bill. Bill comes to us from the Wausau area, was working at WSAW-TV in Wausau, and working for our Wisconsin Public Radio Bureau in Wausau before moving to Madison and starting a new job as a production assistant here at Wisconsin Public Radio. This is just about his first day on the job. He says that he likes fall the best because it's nice and cool and a little gloomy. All right, Bill. He's gonna like it over the next few days, isn't he?
Oh, most certainly. He's got a nice early taste of fall with the rain, the clouds, and the coolness.
Yeah, and that, again, for those just joining us, that Gustav is going to be giving us little early taste of fall over the next several days.
Right, yeah. We're going to get some rain from Gustav.
Yeah. Art in Milwaukee is with us. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. It seems that probably the main reason why Gustav did not cause the danger, injury and loss of life in the U.S. was probably because when it hit Cuba, it started at 150 miles an hour or more and ended up much lower than that after killing about 80 people before that in Haiti and Jamaica. But
that's right.
As far as I know, there were no fatalities in Cuba because of all of their extraordinary measures. I'm just wondering if that's true and if you know anything about the impact when it tore up Cuba.
I know that there was a lot of damage in the western part of Cuba when Gustav crossed over, and you're right, there were fatalities in the Dominican Republic and Haiti, and I think also in Cuba, but I would have to check media reports on that. But the weakening of Gustav as it crossed Cuba was dramatic. I mean, it went from 150-mile-an-hour storm down to just above 100 mile-an-hour, and it never really recovered. One of the big things is even the western part of Cuba has some mountainous terrain, and that the friction and the effects of the mountains basically destroyed the circulation of Gustav. Fortunately, not for the folks that live there, but that gave them lots of rain, torrential rain down there. But as it moved back over to the Gulf of Mexico and was anticipated that it would begin to reorganize and redevelop, it never quite did that, and that's largely due to the circulation getting disrupted, as well as the interaction with other weather systems out over the Gulf of Mexico. But yeah, it was unfortunately a loss of life there. I think the biggest impacts were certainly wind damage as well as considerable flooding in the hilly terrain.
And repeat that for me, Professor Morgan. Normally, after a hurricane in the Gulf hits land, like Cuba, like right. Gustav did, it will slow down. But then I always thought it was the warm temperatures of the Gulf, and they are very warm.
Right, they're extremely warm. In fact, there was a concern that we could see another period of rapid intensification of Gustav, but part of the circulation, the eye wall, never really quite recovered. And some of that could have been due to dry air that Gustav brought in from off the continent of the United States, off the northern Gulf of Mexico. Even though you think of the Gulf as being a very humid area, at upper levels, it was pretty dry. And some of that dry air got into circulation and just didn't allow the storm to regain its strength.
But
it could have been a much even with its track, could have been a much more dangerous storm than it was.
Yeah, thank goodness it didn't regain its strength. Justin in Stoughton is with us now. Hi, Justin. You're on the air.
All right, great. Thank you. I just was curious on what the influence of technology has been in computers and the ability to process so much more information on weather predictions and just generally what you do every day, Professor.
Okay. Thanks for the question. In terms of the technology, I think our ability for us to have weather forecasts that have increasing levels of accuracy at longer ranges has been one of the biggest impacts. And that's, I mean, our understanding of phenomena has certainly increased, but the computing resources have allowed us to begin to model phenomena at much higher resolution, at much finer scales. And that allows us, and once we can get these finer scales resolved and forecast better, that allows the projections out to longer ranges and at larger scales to be enhanced. I'd say computer technology is a big thing, and also the ability to process larger volumes of data. These numerical weather prediction models take in all sorts of observations, from satellite observations, surface observations, ship reports, buoys. There's a wealth of data. A lot of it doesn't even get used because we don't know how to process it yet. But with increasing technologies, we're being able to process more and more of it. And that really helps to enhance our knowledge of what the initial state of the atmosphere is. Then we can take the governing equations, these computer models, and project that state forward. So I'd say increased technology has helped us increase the resolution as well as deal with larger volumes of data. That's enhanced our forecast. One very quick thing is the very first tropical storm of the season, I think the name was Anna or Alma, was actually forecast 10 days before it developed. We had computer projections that were forecasting the development. That's something that was unheard of 5 years ago or even just a few years, you know, even shorter time periods.
Yeah. So what are your students going to be learning today or this semester?
Okay. They're going to be learning a lot about how we get the data into the models. That'll be actually one of the first set of lectures that we do, but also just in these intro courses, basically learning about the dynamics of the atmosphere, the fluids of the atmosphere, how these fluids work at large scales.
Our next caller is Jim in Shawano. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. I believe there's three forms of lightning: in cloud, cloud to cloud, and cloud to ground. But also another form of lightning that's rather rare, ball lightning. Several years ago, my wife and I, while we were looking at a thunderstorm in our enclosed sunroom porch, a ball of fire hit two of our maple trees, bounced over the house, and hit another maple tree with a very loud explosion. It was really something to witness, and the ball of fire came within 10 or 12 feet of us while we were in our enclosed porch.
Yikes.
Right, I've heard of that phenomenon, and unfortunately I have not experienced it myself and really can't speak to how it works. I mean, did it seem like it was floating, or was it manifest to you in terms of this ball? Did it appear to be floating or actually moving with some speed?
Yes, it was moving with some speed. Even the neighbor across the street came over to see if we were all right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, thanks very much for sharing that. Yeah. I can't really speak to how that works.
You know, that lightning is something. I mean, there was a tragedy this summer in southern Wisconsin in the Madison area. A young man was standing on his porch, a covered porch, just looking at a thunderstorm rolling in, struck and killed by lightning. Mm. Just, you got to be careful
tragic.
With it.
That's right.
Oh, let's see. I think we have time for one more. Dave in Janesville. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Now, I got a question. I remember they were talking in the Olympics that the Chinese were going to try and affect the weather. And I noticed that there were some unusual thunderstorms during the Olympics, but I never did find out if the Chinese actually, I mean, can you tell from your satellites if the Chinese actually did do anything during the Olympics to affect the weather?
Huh. Oh, that's an interesting question. I know that the Chinese were vowing no rain over the Olympics, and I really didn't follow the weather that carefully during the Olympics. But I mean, there are a lot of technologies that people have tried in terms of cloud seeding, putting silver iodide in clouds to help to enhance rainfall upstream of areas where you don't want rainfall to occur. But in terms of what influence they had, what impact, were they successful, I really can't tell you that.
Yeah.
And it's something that's somewhat controversial, and also there are also legal issues that go into that in terms of just if they were successful in doing that, someone's not wanting rain could mean someone else that really wants the rain misses it. And so it's really a tough question and an interesting thing, but weather modification is something that I think is still in somewhat of its infancy.
Dave, thanks for the call. Let's end with Ken in Mount Horeb's email. Fall is my favorite season because the temperatures are cool, the trees turn gold and orange, it's harvest season for the fields and gardens, and we're rewarded for the work we've done through the spring and summer. Nice place to end it.
Well,
do you have a favorite season?
Actually, fall is my favorite season as well for many of the same reasons that Ken just suggested. I think it's just a great cooler temperatures, and I actually like the dreary conditions that you're...
Yeah, you and Bill.
Right.
Right.
I like that. It's kind of neat.
Well, I love the fall, too, and I'm also looking forward to traveling around this fall. We'll have more information on our website soon, taking the show on the road every Friday, starting mid-September through October. Friday, we're going to be on the road for the Joyride, so look for more information on our website, wpr.org. Michael Morgan, thanks a lot for being here.
Thanks so much.
Michael Morgan, professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster and Bill Martins for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.